In danger? Yeah, you already said that, and I sort of figured that out when a demon crashed into my volcano. I kicked a rock across the dirt. Your volcano? Yeah. In case you haven't noticed, it's in my backyard, and I'm the one who... Her eyebrows shot up. Who what? I wasn't ready to tell her about my secret entrance. I'd wait to see what she had to tell me first. And why did you lie to me? I said. You don't go to my school. I never said I did. Good point. Then how come you were in Father Baumgarten's office? I just told you you're in danger, and you're thinking about the principal? Technically, I was thinking about her at the principal's office. Where are you from, anyway? In the dimming light, I could see Brooks's nostrils flare. She had 6 freckles across the bridge of her nose. Her jaw clenched, and she took a deep, you're-annoying-me breath. I knew that look. I'd seen it on plenty of faces in my short life, but it had never really mattered until now. Because now it was Brooks. I still couldn't believe this gorgeous girl was at my house, and for the second time in 2 days. Are you always so irritating? She said, crossing her arms. I'm trying to tell you something important. I tried not to lean on my cane. I'd rather be considered irritating than different. Okay, back to the demon. Your drawing was just like what I saw. Have you actually seen one in the flesh? Yeah, so? My mom couldn't see it. I didn't know if I should be relieved that I wasn't going local, or freaked that the demon was real. But if you have, that means I'm not losing my mind. Losing your mind. Uh-huh, she said. This is going to be harder than I thought. Brooks looked over her shoulder. The TV blared through the open windows. Hondo was watching wrestling again. I could hear the grunts and groans and body slams. Brooks lowered her voice. Can we talk somewhere else? I didn't get why she was so tense. I mean, we were out in the middle of the desert with no one around. Who did she think was listening in? The FBI? First, I definitely think you should tell me about the demon pilot and exactly what you mean by danger, I insisted. Like, is it you're going to die kind of danger or a storm's coming kind of danger? I was really hoping it was the latter. It was a risk. I mean, she could have reached her boiling point, thrown up her hands, and stalked off. But, to my relief, she stayed, standing there as if deciding what to tell me. Or maybe how much she was going to tell me, because she looked like the kind of girl who had a million secrets. I think I should show you, she said. Because what I have to tell you, well, you probably won't believe me. But you have to promise you're not going to freak out. Whenever someone makes you promise you're not going to freak out, it's usually time to freak out. We headed through the gate to the backyard. I was glad Mom didn't have any of my underwear hanging on the clothesline. Now that would have been humiliating. As we turned the corner, Rosie lifted her sleepy head from the shady grass, and something came over her. Her eyes zeroed in on Brooks with a creepy laser focus, and in a millisecond she was charging us, barking like a lunatic. "Hey, Rosie," I said, stepping in front of Brooks to shield her with my body. "Calm down." But Rosie was possessed. She was like a completely different dog, a hungry, snarling monster, foaming at the mouth. From behind me, Brooks gripped my shoulders so hard I was sure she had hands of iron. "You didn't tell me you have a dog. You never asked." Rosie froze within a foot of me and Brooks and growled like I'd never heard. Her hackles were raised, sharp and pointy. And who knew she had fangs that long? I backed up to protect Brooks. And then the impossible happened. There was a sudden swish of air next to me. And when I turned, Brooks disappeared. Chapter 5. Okay, maybe disappeared isn't the right word. Brooks changed into something else. To be more exact, the air shimmered gold and blue, then green. She went from being a girl to being a giant hawk in two blinks. I gasped. At first, I thought it was all a dream, or maybe I'd hit my head harder than I thought the other night, and I'd only imagined her coming to my house, and the hawk circling overhead was just an ordinary bird, even though it was three times the normal size. It also occurred to me yet again that I'd taken a one-way trip to Loco Land. Since I was busy looking up at the sky, completely dumbfounded, I didn't see Rosie's rubber ball underneath my feet. I slipped on it and fell backward, landing on my butt with a thud that did nothing to shake off my shock. Did Brooke see that? Probably. Hawks have keen eyesight. I searched the pecan tree where the hawk, Brooks, whatever, had perched, and yes, it was staring down at me from a high branch. Rosie licked my cheek to make sure I was okay, then cowered next to me and whimpered, hiding her face under her paws. I loved her for making an effort to protect me, but she wasn't very good at it. She was about as intimidating as a 50-pound loaf of bread. Brooks? The pitch of my voice hit a new high. She just stared at me with those golden eyes like she was waiting for me to do something, but I was too shocked to do anything but stand there, frozen in place. I'd seen plenty of hawks soaring over the desert, but never one that looked like Brooks. She had a hooked upper beak, chocolate brown wings with white speckles, and her chest was a light tan color. But it was the black around her eyes that set her apart and made her look sort of mythical, in addition to the fact that she was also muy grande. "I think Rosie's done being crazy," I said, hoping Brooks wasn't going to stay a hawk, because that would seriously stink. The air around her shimmered like before, gold and green and blue, and right before my eyes, she shifted back to human form. My heart pretty much stopped. "What the... who are you?" She remained sitting on the tree branch and sighed. "I'm a Nawal." "A Nawhat?" Rosie whined again and nuzzled my leg. I patted her head. "There are lots of words for what I am, but basically, I'm a shapeshifter." Brooks pronounced shapeshifter in a tongue-twisted way that made me think she wasn't used to saying the word. I knew what a shapeshifter was from my Maya mythology book, a human that could change into an animal. In some parts of Mexico, they were called brujos, and some people even thought they were thieves who drank human blood. Great. Nice to meet you. But reading about a shapeshifter is totally different from seeing one in person, or an animal. You don't drink blood, do you? I had to be sure. Just then, Hondo threw open the back screen door. Why was Rosie making all that racket? No reason. We were just playing. Hondo scratched at his stubbly chin and smiled. The Strangler won, kid. We should have bet on him. Best headlock I ever seen. You want me to demonstrate on you? Oh, God, not in front of Brooks. I think I might be getting sick, I lied. Maybe later. He looked disappointed, either that he wasn't going to get to drop me or I wasn't sharing his excitement. So I added, Strangler's the best! Hondo's eyes were on the dark line of the horizon and thankfully not on Brooks, who was still hanging out in the tree. The last bit of sunlight was fading from the sky. Yeah, he muttered, the best. He shrugged and said, I gotta get to the old salt mine. See ya. Then he went inside, slamming the door behind him. I turned back to the tree. Now Brooks was walking along the rickety branch like there wasn't 20 feet of air between her and the skull-crushing ground. Can you not do that? I really didn't want her to splat all over my backyard. No. No what? No, I don't drink blood. And whoever told you that is an idiot. No one told me, I said. It's in a book. Then whoever wrote it is an idiot. Except that in the last 2 days, two mythical creatures from that idiot book have appeared. She sighed. Never mind. So who's the Strangler? A wrestler on TV. Look, Rosie's fine, so can you please come down? She doesn't like me. She's just protective of me. And to be fair, she's never met a shapeshifter before. Her teeth look pretty sharp. I squatted next to Rosie. Are you done barking at Brooks? I tugged on her collar to make it look like she was nodding. And are you going to be on your best behavior? Another nod. See? I said to Brooks, throwing her my most convincing smile. Brooks didn't look convinced. What happened to her leg? I found her like that, I said with a shrug. I didn't like talking about Rosie's missing leg. It reminded me of my theory that her previous owner had abused her. When I first saw Rosie, she was all bones and no spirit, and I'd wanted to pound the person who had abandoned her. I made a promise to her then that no one would ever hurt her again. She's fierce, Brooks admitted. I like that. Brooks had asked enough questions. Now it was my turn. So where are you from, anyway?
A place.
You want to be more specific? It's not on any map, or at least none you've seen. I gazed up at her. What is it, like some bird place? You're impossible. You're the one up in the tree. I needed a different tactic. That's what the FBI does when they question a criminal who's not talking. They come at him from a new angle to throw him off balance, and then, boom, they go in for the kill. Theoretically, that is. So have you always been a shapeshifter? Brooks frowned. I'm not here to talk about me. Fine, I said, exasperated. Then come down. I'll meet you at the base of the volcano. There? Really? You can't just talk to me here? Don't you want to find out what's going on? And just like that, she turned into the hawk again and flew away. Show off. It would take me a little longer to get to the volcano, since I couldn't fly. And of course, there was my bum leg. Rosie and I hurried as fast as we could, because apparently Brooks had something incredible to tell me. The whole way there, I tried to get a handle on the weirdness of it all. I mean, turning into a hawk was so not normal. The more I thought about it, the more I wanted to backtrack home. I didn't even know Brooks or what exactly a Nawal was, and now she wanted me to go back to where the demon had confronted me? What if she was on the creature's side and trying to lure me into a trap? I mean, she did sort of dress like an assassin. What do you think, Rosie? Should we trust her? Rosie grunted in response. Here's the deal, I said. I don't know whether to keep going or turn back. You decide. Rosie barked and kept trotting forward. My dog was an exceptional judge of character. If Rosie was willing to give Brooks the benefit of the doubt, I decided I could give it a shot too. When we reached the base of the volcano, Brooks was waiting there, looking up at the crater like she was wondering what was inside. Rosie treaded up to her, sniffing cautiously. I thought Brooks might freak and turn into a hawk again, but she didn't. She squatted and held her hand out gently for Rosie to smell. Rosie whined, sniffed, retreated. She did this a few times while Brooks waited patiently, and I held my breath. I suppose I wanted Rosie to like Brooks because, well, just because. With one last whine, Rosie got close enough to Brooks to get a chin scratch, and my dog's eyes rolled back with pleasure. I let out a long whoosh of air. Hey, girl, Brooks said, smiling. You're a little champ, you know that? Rosie ate it up, rolling onto her back so Brooks could rub her belly. Then her lips went up in her signature smile. Yep, that's right. You guys probably wouldn't know this, but dogs can smile. Rosie raised her eyebrows and grinned so wide her eyes looked like slits, and we could see all her pearly whites. Okay, enough chumminess. Brooks had dragged me back to the volcano, not exactly the place I wanted to see up close, at least not for a very long time, and she turned into a bird right in front of me, and she'd said I was in danger. It was time for some answers. But before I could ask my first question, Brooks said, Rosie, like most dogs, they don't trust me at first. They sense that I'm... part animal? I wanted to say, but I knew it would sound worse out loud, and I also didn't want to make her say it. Well, she likes you now, I said. After a small stretch of silence, I had to ask, are you even human? Yes. I mean, mostly. Mostly was good. A lot better than barely. We need to get moving. Brooks patted Rosie once more, then began climbing the narrow trail. I don't think we're allowed up there, I said. That's the crash site, and there's an investigation. I thought you said this is your volcano. It is. I already hated the way she twisted things around. But where exactly are you going? To look for the demon? If so, I was out of there. There has to be a way inside, and since this is your volcano, I thought you could show it to me. I wiped my brow. I'd never even talked about the secret caves, much less shown them to anyone. But they might impress her, and that was important to me for some reason. There might just be a hidden entrance. I knew it! Brooks pressed her lips together. Will you take me there? I was about to negotiate. I still needed Brooks to give me more info, when Rosie barked and took off toward the caves. Traitor! With a light laugh, Brooks quirked her left brow and said, okay then, come on. Do you want to know the truth or not? How much truth could a person handle in one day? I hurried alongside her, wishing I didn't have to use my cane, but she didn't seem to care. Thankfully, the entrance was only halfway up the beast, but it was around the back, so it took some time to get there. Brooks's footsteps crunched along the ashy gravel as we followed Rosie, but otherwise she was quiet. So, can you change into anything you want? I asked. I was starting to realize how awesome her shape-shifting ability was. I mean, seriously, who wouldn't want to change into whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted? Definitely 100 on the amazing scale. I can only change into a hawk, at least for now. I'm still learning, and when I get nervous, I can't really control it. It just sort of happens. The switchback trail was steep and rocky, bordered by clumps of wayward weeds that, in the dark, could definitely be mistaken for hairy sea creatures. After some moments of silence, Brooks finally asked quietly, "So you don't think I'm weird?" "Weird? Well, yeah." Brooks stopped and turned to look at me. I quickly added, "But in a good way, I think you're about the most interesting person I've ever met." I know, I should have played it cool, but it slipped out. Her eyes crinkled around the edges, and I could tell there was a smile waiting there. "How come you were at Baumgarten's if you don't go to my school?" I asked. "I thought it would be better to meet you somewhere, you know, public. It wouldn't be as creepy as me showing up at your front door." She continued hiking. "Right. Not creepy at all, and she'd shown up at my front door anyway." "So how come we're climbing up here?" I asked. "I mean, I'd rather not run into Señor Demon again. He looked pretty vicious." "You ask a lot of questions, and officially he's a demon runner." "Oh, good. That sounded a whole lot better." "You don't have to worry about the demon runner, Zane," she went on. "There was more than one?" "But you said, and I quote, you're in danger, Zane. Big danger." "What danger could be bigger than those 10-foot knuckle-dragging monsters?" Brooks nodded thoughtfully. "You are, but not from those demon runners. They need you." "Why the heck would they need me?" Rosie barked like she wanted to know too. "And why would you go to all this trouble to search for me, of all people?" "It's what I've been trying to tell you. There's a prophecy. A very big prophecy that was told hundreds of years ago. And, well," she took a big breath, "you're part of it." Chapter 6 Me? If there'd been a rewind button, I would have pressed it just to make sure I'd heard her right. I mean, it's not every day you find out you're in the middle of some ancient prophecy and demon runners want to be your buds. How could I be a part of anything? I wasn't even alive hundreds of years ago. "That's why it's a prophecy," A divination. Seeing the future. Yeah, I know what it means. I'm a psychic's assistant, you know. Although Miss Cab's psychic gift was third-string quality lately. She'd never warned me about getting into dumb holy ghost. And how come she hadn't seen Brooks coming? On the other hand, she had told me that the volcano was dangerous, complete with lurking evil. It made me wonder how much she knew. I gripped my cane. So is that why you're here? To tell me about this prophecy? That and some other stuff. But first, tell me what happened the other night. I need to hear it in your words. Why? To compare notes. Hold on. I was the one who had all the questions. Why was she demanding answers from me? Yet again, I couldn't shake the feeling that she was trying to trick me. I'll make you a deal, I said. I'll tell you what happened if you promise to give up what you know, as in everything. She hesitated, like she wasn't used to making deals, then said, fine. So I spilled the entire story, down to the nasty hair on the demon's back and the way he dragged his bulging knuckles on the ground. I tried to sound casual, but retelling the whole thing sent shivers down my legs, and I sort of wished we weren't hiking at dusk. And then it hissed something like, ah, pork. My best imitation sounded more like a wheezing old man. Brooks grabbed my arm, stopping me in my tracks. The demon runner actually said Apooch's name? She pronounced it Apooch. Apooch is someone's name? It sounds like some kind of insult, I said. Who or what is Apooch? I leaned on my cane as a sudden gust kicked up the sand. I rubbed a few specks from my eyes, and when I looked back at Brooks, she was gazing into the darkness toward the hidden cave as if she could see it. But that was impossible. It was about 30 yards ahead, and so well camouflaged by branches that any hiker would pass by without noticing it. There are two things I need to tell you, she said. Both are likely to freak you out. This part is the least freaky.
Only two freaky things? Great. I braced myself. Okay.
Apooch is the Maya god of death, disaster, and darkness. His nickname is the Stinking One. Maybe because he smells like puke. He ruled over the lowest level of Xibalba, the underworld, the darkest, worst, creepiest place anywhere. Being the god of death wasn't enough. He had to be lord of three things. My mind played those awful words in a loop. Death, disaster, and darkness. Brooks frowned. Zane, you okay? Okay? I was definitely not okay. There was a picture of the god of death in my holy water-soaked Maya book. I recalled a split skull and bulging, deranged eyes. Man, I hoped my memory was wrong. So this puke guy, he's like, what, a myth? I asked hopefully. Myths are real, Zane. Well, most are. And gods are very real, an important part of the universe and its balance. Long ago, Apooch got into a war with some of the other gods and lost. Gods, balance, war. Okay, this was bigger than I could ever have imagined. My mind was spinning so fast, I didn't know what to focus on first. Gods are real? I tried to remember the other gods listed in my book. There were too many to keep track of, and on top of that, their names were impossible to pronounce. Of course they're real, she said nonchalantly. Which gods did he fight? Let's see. There's Nakon, god of war, and Ishkakau. Ishkakau, I repeated. She's the goddess of chocolate. Her name came to me because it was fun to say, and because who doesn't love chocolate? Brooks's eyebrows shot up in surprise. How'd you know? That book. You know, the one you said was written by an idiot? Anyways, it doesn't matter which gods Apooch fought. What matters is that he lost, and the gods imprisoned him. Some other gods stole his throne, and then the gods made sure he got a taste of his own medicine. Medicine? Torture, dismemberment, that sort of thing. Now I did feel sick. So where's this hidden cave? Brooks asked. But you haven't told me everything. I knew in my gut there was more. She looked around. Let's get inside. I promise I'll tell you the rest. I studied her face for an eye twitch or a jaw clench or anything that would tell me I shouldn't trust her. How do I know you're not going to knock me over the head with a rock and drag me to that demon runner? Brooks's nose flared. I wouldn't need to get you in the volcano to do that, Zane. She inched closer. But if you don't want to know the truth about your destiny, then... She shrugged. Destiny? My guts churned. If I show you, I said, you have to swear that no matter what, you'll never, ever, ever tell anyone about this cave. Brooks's brows came together. Zane, I'm a Nawal. Our word is stronger than steel. I promise your secret is safe with me. I walked over to the opening, squatted, and removed the branches to reveal the crawl space. I really don't think we should go in there right this second, I said. How come? Well, because it's dark, a murderous demon might be waiting in there, and oh yeah, we could die. I have to see it. Brooks peered over my shoulder into the darkness, to make sure this is the right place. I could wait here, I said, trying to be chill. Act as the lookout. I get it. You're scared. I didn't like the way she was looking at me. I've been in there loads of times, I said with a casual shrug, but that was before all this talk about prophecies and demons and death. And I'm not scared. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. I was totally scared. Hate to tell you, but it's going to get a whole lot worse than this. Right, the second freaky thing. You still haven't told. Brooks plunged ahead, crawling into the dark space. Wait! She glanced back over her shoulder, and her eyes locked with mine. I definitely didn't want to go in that dark cave where a demon might be lurking, but I couldn't let her go alone. That would make me the biggest wimp of all time. Ugh. Rosie looked up at me with her big brown eyes and let out a little groan like she was saying, "You can't be serious." But this was my volcano, and if we were going to go monster hunting, then I should lead the way. If we had to get out of there fast, I knew the route by heart. Come on, girl, I coaxed Rosie as I got down on my hands and knees. You've done this before. Brooks allowed Rosie and me to pass in front of her. How far do we have to crawl? She asked. Just up ahead, there's a chamber where we can stand, and then we can walk the rest of the way. I clutched my cane as I crawled on all fours through the tight, rocky passage. What exactly are you looking for? My voice hung in the cool air. You said you had to be sure this is the place? I had a gnawing feeling that whatever Brooks was searching for was the same thing the demon runner had been digging for. A sudden light illuminated the corridor. I looked over my shoulder. Brooks was holding a mini flashlight that hung from her neck by a black cord. Seeing my surprise, she smiled and said, I'm always prepared. A minute later, we came to a 12x12 chamber where three tunnels branched off in different directions. I got to my feet, wiping my hands on my jeans. This place is so cool, Brooks said, standing. Which passage do we take to get to the center of the volcano? First things first, we had a deal, I said. I gave up my story, and now it's your turn to spill the rest. You said something about a prophecy? Right. Okay, there was this great soothsayer, the first seer of all time. She was very powerful, and her prophecies were never wrong. Is that the second freaky thing? Dumb question, I know, but a guy could hope. Brooks tucked a stray hair behind her ear. Like I told you, Apuch was imprisoned. The gods placed him in a magical artifact they created to make sure he never got out. Okay. Rosie sniffed the ground eagerly. Brooks pointed to the tunnel where Rosie had wandered to. Let's take that one. It leads to a dead end, I said. That one over there leads to another chamber. But maybe if you told me what we were looking for, I could point us in the right direction. With a breathy whisper, Brooks said, He's in here. I felt woozy. The demon runner? Apooch. What? The cavern spun around me. Everything felt so big and real and out of control all of a sudden. Inevitable, like the hands of a clock turning in a direction I couldn't stop. How do you know? With a quick whistle, I called Rosie to my side. It's perfect, right? Stick the god of death in some artifact laced with magic and bury it in the depths of a volcano that the gods themselves created, she said. Did you really think it was an accident you discovered this entrance? It's destiny, Zane. It tells me the prophecy is real, and it's happening. Rosie broke free of my grip and took off down the corridor that led to a larger chamber. Rosie! I hurried after her, catching her in a few strides. What's gotten into you, girl? I tried to tug her back to the first chamber, but she resisted. Brooks was right behind me, shining her flashlight down the narrow, curved passage. How far does this go? About 50 yards, but I already told you it's a dead end, and I'm not about to go looking for some god of death and darkness that you think is hidden in this volcano because of some dumb old prophecy. Zane, why do you think the demon runner crashed here? Because they don't know how to fly planes? Because Puke's stupid demon runners are loyal pack dogs whose only mission is to serve him, and somehow they learned he was here. She smacked her palm against her forehead. That's it. What? What's it? You cleared the opening to these caves, right? That allowed Apooch's distress signals to reach his demon runners. Her voice was way too eager. That's how the demon runner knew to come here. So this was my fault? I wondered miserably. I swallowed the fat lump in my throat as I recalled the creepy tracks I'd seen the night of the crash. I told Brooks about them and added the obvious. The demon runner? He must have tried to find an entrance on foot, and when he couldn't, he flew the plane into the crater, thinking it would open the volcano so he could find his jefe. Seems like a stupid plan, if you ask me. They aren't known for their intelligence, Brooks said. I mean, they are the lowest-level demons. Their pea brains are mush compared to a regular demon that can talk to you in full sentences. I didn't think I wanted to meet a regular demon if it could talk to me. Sweat trickled down the back of my neck. You don't think that demon runner found its way in here, do you? My brain had gone from first to second gear so fast I hadn't noticed Brooks nudging me down the tunnel. It's very likely that it found its way inside, she said, matter-of-factly. Great. And with my luck, we were heading straight for its giant fangs. I hoped it had already eaten dinner. But we would have seen the demon's tracks outside, and I didn't see any, so I bet we're totally in the clear, I said, trying to convince myself. Except they don't always walk, Zane. I remembered the way the demon runner had vanished into a trail of mist. Rosie groaned like she remembered it, too. The hairs of my arms stood straight up. Let's assume the worst. My voice came out in a shaky whisper. Say the demon runner got inside and found this magical artifact. Do you think he let Puke out? Brooks's breathing filled the space as she tugged me along. They don't have the power to do that. Then why go to all the trouble to find their boss? You ready for the second freaky thing? She asked. My stomach clenched, and I tried to prepare my mind. What little of it was left. Bring it. The great soothsayer foretold something called the Prophecy of Fire. Okay. She saw... I ducked into the narrowest part of the passage. Saw what? You. I spun to face her. Me? Zane, Brooks said slowly. You're the one who's going to set Apooch free. Chapter 7. I pushed her flashlight out of my eyes. Hang on. I don't care how powerful this soothsayer person was, she was dead wrong. I'd never be stupid enough to let some ugly, hairy, war-hungry monster free.
Uh-huh. Brooks raised one eyebrow. Well, I never said Apooch was hairy, and the soothsayer was punished for making that prophecy, so I'm pretty sure she was right. I mean, think about it. Why would she risk death for a lie?
Death?
The gods killed her. I guess they didn't like what she had to say.
Which was what, exactly?
She lowered her voice to a hush.
That a powerful innocent with ancient blood would be born, and he would release the great god of death, and evil would be unleashed during a solar eclipse.
Solar eclipse? I thought, with growing dread, there's supposed to be one tomorrow.
How exactly does that describe me? That could be anyone. I wasn't powerful, not in the least. And what was up with innocent? I wasn't Bambi.
Brooks twisted her mouth.
All the clues lead to you.
Says who?
Don't worry. I'm going to help you find Apooch's little hiding place. And once I get my hands on the artifact, I'll take it far away, and you won't have to be the guy who ruined the world. Sound good?
But maybe the demon runner already took it.
I was rooting for this big time.
That's impossible.
Of course it was.
Why?
The demon runners want you to release Apooch. They never take the artifact away from you. Plus, Apooch can only be released at the same place he was buried.
You gods really tried to cover all contingencies, didn't you?
What happens if Apooch gets free? I asked.
He'll cruise back to hell to reclaim his kingdom and be a king or god of the dead or whatever, right?
My voice echoed through the tunnel.
Doubt it. When he got locked away, he swore to take revenge on his punishers. After that, he would destroy the whole world.
Okay, no way I was going to let that happen.
Do you even know what the artifact is?
It could be anything. A rock, a statue, a piece of glass.
She looked around.
Don't worry, you'll know.
Heat rushed into my face.
Maybe I'd rather not know.
Don't look so freaked, she said casually.
Sure, why worry? An ancient god of the dead was locked away in some magical object, which could be anything, in a volcano in my backyard, and I was prophesied to let the guy out. Absolutely nothing to fret about.
And what do you have to do with all this? I asked, thinking it was about dinner time or study time or any time that would get me out of here.
It's my quest.
Quest.
To prove myself.
To who?
She tugged on her sleeve and shook her head.
Let's just say it's a big deal and I have to succeed. But that doesn't matter. Right now, all you need to know is that the artifact's magic will call to you in some way. You're the only one who can answer it.
Understand now?
Well, then let's just leave puke in here to rot. I'll pretend none of this ever happened. No need to go looking for the guy.
Brooks wrinkled her nose, and I could tell I wasn't going to like whatever she was going to say next.
That's not how this works. You don't exactly have a choice. Once the magic calls, you'll answer.
Calls? Like 1-800-MAGIC?
Like you'll sense it somehow. Brooks searched my face.
You'll know when the magic summons you.
I think.
You won't be able to resist. Even if you tried to, the demon runners would capture you and force you to free Apooch.
All I know is that we shouldn't be here.
My stomach felt like it was churning in a blender. I hated that I wasn't being given a choice.
Whatever. I'd show that ancient soothsayer and Brooks they had it all wrong. I'd block any call that came in from stupid magic.
A terrible guilt gnawed at my insides.
Why'd I have to open that stupid pathway into the volcano?
Why should I believe you? I blurted out. How do I even know you're on the right side of things?
Brooks's face fell, and I could tell I'd touched a nerve.
You're right to wonder, she said. How could you know I'm a good guy?
Her eyes met mine in the dim light.
As a Nawal, I'm naturally loyal. It's in my DNA. We're meant to serve the higher good.
Higher good?
I had no idea what she was talking about.
Zane, think about it. If I wanted Apooch to get free, I'd want you to find him and let him out. But like I told you, I want to take the artifact away.
She came closer, her face tense and determined.
I come from a world you couldn't possibly understand. Why can't you just thank me for helping you?
I didn't know why, but her words stung. I pivoted and continued into the darkness. Actually, I said over my shoulder, since I'm the only one who can hear the magic call, I think you mean that you should be thanking me.
Rosie huffed as she padded alongside me. I patted her head.
You said it, girl. This is nuts.
We came to a sharp downward slope that opened up into a larger cavernous space. I'd been here before during my cave explorations, but this time, the smell of something rotten choked the usually earth-scented air. My gut was screaming, "Get out!" About 20 feet down was an uneven sandy floor about 15 feet wide. It branched off into a narrow passage that I knew came to a dead end. Brooks looked around, cautiously.
"Holy Kay," she whispered.
"Kay?"
"It's for Kukul Khan, Supreme God of Coolness?"
She took in my blank stare and sighed.
"Never mind."
Rosie sniffed the ground and whined. I followed Brooks down the rocky path, nearly stumbling on loose gravel.
"Okay, nothing's calling me," I said cheerfully. "You have the wrong guy. Mistaken identity. Happens all the time. You hungry? Want to go back for dinner now?"
Brooks looked around anxiously.
"Are you sure you don't sense anything?"
"Very."
"Like 60% or closer to 100? She asked.
An eerie moaning sound came from the tunnel to our right.
Make that -0% sure, I said.
"Did you hear that?"
Clunk, clunk, clunk.
"Or that?"
My eyes darted across the dark space. We definitely weren't alone. Something was down that tunnel. Rosie began to dance in place. I hooked my thumb under her collar.
"Calm down, girl," I whispered.
A grunt echoed and was followed by the familiar and disgusting odor of vomit.
"You smell that?" I whispered.
"Yup,"
Brooks said in a hushed tone. "A ways back."
And with that, she rushed into the tunnel.
"Brooks!" I hissed, trailing her.
When I reached her, she was standing frozen. At the end of the 10-foot passage, crouched a demon runner with its back to us. I couldn't tell if it was the same one from the other night. Its bluish flesh was translucent, with black ropey veins twisting beneath. The weirdest thing? The monster was wearing a pair of big over-the-ear headphones.
"Demons listen to music?" I whispered.
Thankfully, it hadn't heard or seen us yet. Brooks sounded like she might start hyperventilating. I realized the demon was creating an opening in the wall by methodically removing rocks one at a time and stacking them on the ground. It must have been really tedious work. I hope the creature's playlist was a good one, as in calm, easy listening. Brooks began to back away slowly. Rosie whimpered, and the demon runner turned its head toward us. It might have been my pilot friend, I wasn't sure. Its eyes were big and fiery, and the clumps of hair on its body were blacker and coarser up close. It looked like a giant, angry Brillo pad. With a pounding heart, I carefully stepped back too, tugging Rosie along. She barked frantically, trying to break free. The demon growled, sniffed the air, and took a step toward us, then another, matching my pace as it turned its head to one side, like it was studying me.
We were just leaving, I said shakily.
The demon kept coming. I so badly wanted to turn and bolt, but I worried that any sudden movements would send this thing into killing mode. We backed into the chamber.
Move out of the way, Zane, Brooks said, sidestepping me.
The demon emerged from the tunnel. Brooks hollered,
"Take that!" Her flashlight's beam turned red, and she shone the light on the creature's face. It writhed and screamed as its skin sizzled, and here I'd thought the smell couldn't have gotten any worse. Rosie snarled. Brooks drew closer to the demon runner, really letting it have it with her flesh-eating flashlight. Then the beam flickered, dimmed, and died completely. Seriously? Didn't she know you always have to check the batteries before going demon hunting? She smacked the flashlight against the palm of her hand as the demon shook off the pain and its headphones and came at us again. Brooks, hurry! We gotta get out of here! She clambered back up the way we'd come, passing me on the slope because she was faster on her feet. Loose rocks tumbled down after her, hitting my cane. I lost my footing once, then again, cursing my stupid leg, but I managed to keep my balance. The demon's shrieks of "Ah, pooch!" bounced off the cave walls, making me shudder. Rosie was going crazy, slipping and sliding as she climbed ahead of me. I kept stumbling, maybe because of sheer panic, or the fact that the demon was only steps away and its skin was now slick with some kind of yellow ooze. "Zane Obispo," it hissed. "Zane Obispo." Hearing that, I tripped and nearly fell. How did this monster know my name? "Hurry!" Brooks cried as she rushed on toward the tunnel that led out of here. "Don't let it touch you! Its slime is poisonous!" Then she morphed into a hawk. Her flashlight dropped to the floor. In that moment, I knew I wasn't going to make it out of there. I figured maybe I could distract the demon runner long enough to give Brooks and Rosie a bigger head start. Once I reached the top of the path, I pressed my back against the wall and shielded Rosie behind my legs. I extended my cane in front of me, wishing it were a monster-killing sword. Rosie barked and howled, then slipped out from between my legs. Using her powerful back haunches, she leaped right into the beast's chest, sinking her teeth into its throat. "Rosie!" The beast staggered and tried to rip Rosie off with its slime-covered hands. Her jaws maintained their tight grip. "Don't touch her!" I screamed. Brooks swooped in to help. She clawed at the monster's eyes, her cry of "Kiar!" piercing my skull. I picked up a rock and threw it at the demon runner, but I missed by a mile. The demon finally succeeded in tearing Rosie from its chest, and it tossed her into the wall. She yelped as she smacked against the rocks, then landed with a terrible thud on the floor below. "No!" An uncontrollable rage flooded my heart. I launched myself at the beast, and it grabbed me by the arms, sinking its long claws into my flesh. I screamed in pain and fell to the ground, dropping my cane. Brooks circled above, and the demon swatted at her like she was a mosquito. A burning sensation radiated through my body. In agony, I rolled to my knees and inched toward Rosie. Slime sizzled through my shirt sleeve, burning my skin like acid. The demon grabbed hold of my short leg. Its claws ripped through my jeans and into my calf muscle. "Get off of me, you slime bag!" I shouted, twisting onto my back as the demon dragged me across the ground. "You free, ah, pooch," it hissed. It headed toward the dead-end tunnel we'd come from, not caring that my head was bouncing against rocks along the way. Brooks flew overhead with my warrior cane in her mouth. She dropped it next to me, but my arms felt like noodles as I reached for it. An effect of the slime? I wondered dizzily. I managed to snag the cane and I clutched it tightly to my chest. We reached the wall the demon runner had been dismantling before. With its free hand, the demon began clawing at it again. I knew what I had to do, and I'd only get one chance. "Hey!" I screamed. "I'll help you! Just let go of my legs so I can stand!" The demon looked over its shoulder at me. Long, nasty fangs curled over its bruise-colored lip. Slime oozed from the holes where a nose should have been. Lumpy ears drooped with the weight of round wooden earrings that stretched its lobes like tortilla dough.
I couldn't tell what it was thinking, but fortunately, it complied. As soon as the demon runner released me, I wriggled away on my back, repositioning myself. With my good leg, I swept the demon's ankles, Hondo's favorite double leg takedown, and sent it sprawling. I scrambled to my feet and raised my cane as the demon awkwardly got back to a standing position. When it turned to face me, I used the last of my strength to thrust the end of my cane into its belly. It sank right into the creature's gel-like body, and there was a disgusting, sucking sound as the cane disappeared inside. The creature howled. I jumped back, expecting a strike, but instead, it collapsed, clutching its gut with an ear-piercing cry. I blinked as the monster dissolved into a dark pool of thick mucus, cane and all. Chapter 8. In that millisecond, everything I knew or thought I knew was reduced to one word: poison. I fell to my knees and cradled Rosie to my chest. I didn't care if the slime on her fur burned off every ounce of my flesh. "Rosie!" I ran my hands along her body, wiping off as much of the slime as I could. Her breathing was shallow, and she whimpered quietly. "I'm sorry, girl. So sorry." Brooks was back in human form. She knelt next to me, shaking her head and apologizing over and over. It was like her voice was lost in a dark tunnel somewhere, muffled and distant. "How do I heal her?" I asked. It didn't matter that I sounded like a baby or my eyes burned with hot tears. Rosie trembled in my arms. "Brooks!" Then a wall seemed lost, scanning the ground as if the miracle answer were there to be plucked from the cave. Rosie looked at me with those big brown eyes like she was pleading with me to make it all better. I hated myself for breaking my promise, for letting her get hurt. "Hang on, girl," I said, standing up. I started to carry her out. All the muscles in my legs screamed. I could do this. One careful foot in front of the other, like walking the volcano's rim. Rosie's breathing grew heavy. A deep, awful kind of heavy that made me want to punch a hole through this stupid world. And then she shuddered for the last time. Her body lay there in my arms, still. I fell to my knees. I couldn't even inhale. Then, in a single instant, Rosie vanished into a shimmering stream of blue dust. I stared blankly at my now empty hands. "Rosie? Where's Rosie? What just happened?" Brooks looked as stunned as I felt. "Brooks! Where did my dog go?" I was angry now, a freaking out kind of angry. She shut her eyes and shook her head slowly. "Chibalba, the underworld."
"No! How?"
"She was killed by a demon runner, and that means..."
"It's a real place? Where is it? I need to go find her!"
I was shouting now.
You can't go there. Why not?" "Because you'd have to be dead."
My anger turned into a terrible heat that raced through my blood like lava.
"We have to get out of here," Brooks cried. "More demon runners will come and try to..." "Not without Rosie." "She isn't here, Zane."
It was hard enough getting rid of one demon runner. Imagine fighting half a dozen of them. Brooks grabbed me by the arm, making me look her in the eyes.
"Please. What about your big quest?" I said, shrugging her off.
Brooks's bottom lip trembled.
"The prophecy is supposed to come to pass during the eclipse."
Her voice was quiet and small.
"We still have a day left to find the artifact. But right now, I have to get you out of here. This isn't the right time."
I heard thunder boom outside. My heart didn't want me to leave, but my brain knew I had to. If I was going to help Rosie, I needed answers, and they weren't in the cave. Puke, his stupid artifact, and all his demons could rot for all I cared. "I won't forget you, Rosie," I said into the darkness. "I'll come for you." Back outside, a sudden rain slashed the desert, soaking us in an instant, washing away the slime and soothing my skin. My bum leg was bleeding from the puncture wounds in my calf. My head throbbed, and every inch of me ached. Brooks could have left me behind, but she didn't. She followed as I stumbled to the bottom of the muddied trail. I turned my hands over, assessing the poison's damage. My palms looked and felt like someone had scalded them with hot water. Brooks rubbed her own hands together in the rain. When a demon runner is threatened, their skin oozes venom. It's a defense mechanism. "How come it killed Rosie, but not us?" Brooks didn't look at me. "Rosie is just a dog. She's not just a dog." "That's not what I meant," Brooks said hastily. "I meant I'm a Nawal, a supernatural, so the poison couldn't kill me. And you're..." Her voice cut off. "What?" "You're a supernatural, too." "Supernatural?" I echoed in disbelief. Headlights shone from across the desert. Someone was driving toward us. "I've got to go," Brooks shouted as the rain subsided. "First tell me how to get Rosie back." Brooks pushed her sopping wet hair off her face. "I don't know." Her voice was wobbly, and I thought she might start crying, but no tears came, or maybe the rain hid them. "It's my fault," she said. "I thought I could do this. I thought I could make everything better." "Better? Make what better?" The headlights were only 20 yards away. Whoever was coming already had us in their sights. I dragged myself forward, determined to find my dog as well as some answers. If Brooks didn't have them, maybe my Maya book would. I'd read about the underworld before, and I sort of remembered a story about someone who'd gone there, or come back from there. I wasn't sure which. When I turned back to ask Brooks if she knew that myth, she was gone. She must have flown off. A scratching sound nearby caught my attention. I lifted my gaze to see an owl blacker than ink perched on a boulder above me. It was the same one from the other night. That couldn't be Brooks, could it? The owl's yellow eyes glowed like two flickering flames as they peered at me. No, Brooks only knew how to turn into a hawk, and she wouldn't choose the form of an owl, even if she could. Mom said they were omens of death and to stay far away from them. The headlights shone across the space, and the owl spread its wings. Its penetrating gaze held me frozen as it said in a woman's raspy voice, "The prophecy has begun." A talking owl? After the day I'd had, why not? I picked up a rock and launched it at the bird, missing its glistening body by a long shot. "I'm not part of any stupid prophecy. I only want my dog back." The owl let out a single cry. It was more of a screech than a hoot, and took off into the sky. I recognized the little red truck as soon as Ms. Cab stepped out. It was a hunk of junk that had sat in her driveway ever since I could remember. It took a second for my brain to click. Blind people don't drive. How was she here? I wondered. How had she known where to find me?
"Zane, you need to come with me," she said.
My stomach suddenly felt queasy. My knees buckled. And then I passed out. When I woke up, I was in Miss Cab's house. The ceiling fan turned in lopsided circles above me.
"Oh, good, you're awake," she said as she sidestepped the piles of paper and books strewn across her cluttered living room.
I never understood why she had so many books, her being blind and all. I sat up on the yellow velvet sofa. It was where I always sat when I answered her psychic hotline. Her place smelled like wet desert and pencil.